In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to our private investigator, Peter, from Absolute Facts. And if you go onto our website, the www.yarravalleyfm.org.au, on the top page, have a look down there. You'll see podcasts. Click on that. On the second page, look for Choice Tunes. It stands out pretty quick, pretty boldly. Click on Choice Tunes and go down there a few, and you'll actually see Peter's life in music. So have a look at it, and you'll know a little bit more about Peter. And he'll be with us here in about 2 minutes.
By the Community Broadcasting Foundation, cbf.com.au.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and being the first Wednesday, Pete, you heard that, the first Wednesday of the month, we have our private investigator, Peter, from Absolute Facts. Peter, we sent you away with we had a question from a listener last time that people wanting to know what a private investigator is allowed to do, is not allowed to do. You've told us a bit about what you do, but what if there are any things you're not allowed to do, like are you automatically allowed to have a gun licence because you're a private investigator? Can you sit on juries? Is there anything that you can't do?
Yes, good afternoon, Alan, on this nice sunny Wednesday.
I know you're having a shot at me, but I deserve it.
No, that's okay. Look, as far as sitting on the jury, I'll start with that one, of course. There's no specific legislation to say that a private investigator cannot sit on a jury. However, I would have thought it during any selection process, probably both sides would would put an eyebrow up, and I dare say probably get excluded fairly quickly.
Why? Because you look shady, or?
Well, yes, that's part of it, but I think they probably expect that that maybe you know, as a private investigator, you might come in with some predetermined attitudes, but also perhaps you might overanalyze whatever case you might be sitting on, and have a have an influence on other jurors.
And, so and that's not an unfair thing to say either, is it?
What's that, sorry?
Well, that's not an unfair assumption either.
Well, you'd like to think that perhaps there might be an element of cynicism in the first instance, but also probably in respect to methodology and things like that, might well be over analytical, I would have thought.
Right. So what about... Yeah. Like, do you have an automatic right to carry a gun or something like that because you are a private investigator?
Yep. So that's an absolute and clear no. So absolutely no weapons at all. That's a completely different licensing requirement through the Victoria Police, through the private agents registry, and that would be a gun license is along the lines of a security guard or a crowd controller. Right. And even then, it has to be, to my understanding, quite a specific task. So, for argument's sake, someone that might be working on or clearing automatic teller machines, ATMs, right. I understand they are allowed to have a gun license. But no, it's a very specific no in respect to any form of weaponry. And realistically, our job is to be a bit more in the background, so avoiding confrontations is one of the primary objectives, and therefore you shouldn't need a weapon. And look, to be honest, I've never been physically harmed in more than 30 years in the industry, and hopefully that stays the case.
Yep.
And then with the unlawful, we were asking about what you can't do. Well, basically, we can't do anything that's unlawful. So it's the same restrictions as a member of the general public. We have to be fully aware of avoiding, well, of protecting people's privacy, including the client's privacy and the target's privacy. You have to be aware of harassment. Like everybody else, we have to be subject and aware to harassment. So probably to answer the question, there are things that a private investigator might do in respect to perhaps being a little bit more brazen out in the field and undertaking pretexts and things like that. And a lot of times it just really comes down to personalities and having a bit of a pretext organised. And if you're after a specific question or an avenue of inquiry, there's no harm in having a go in the public domain, but you can't guarantee the result, of course. So it's an interesting one. Sometimes the more bold you are, the more information you actually get.
but again,
just going back to, and be very clear about this, basically I'm not allowed to do what all members of the public are not allowed to do. There's no differentiation
between the two. All right, Peter, I've got to take a quick break, and then we've already had a question come in, and if anyone wants another question, 59615991, 59615991. We'll put this one to Peter. Very interesting, this one. Peter, I'll be back in a couple of minutes to hear your response.
Okay, look forward to it.
Around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to Jackson. You know I'm pleasure bound. Snowball Jackson.
Go ahead and see if I care.
When I breeze into that city, people gonna stoop and bow. All those women gonna beg me, teach them what they don't know how. I'm going to Jackson. You turn loose in my coat. Yeah, I'm going to Jackson.
Goodbye. So she
fire went out, we're going to Jackson, and that's a matter of fact. Yeah, we're going to Jackson, ain't never coming back. Yeah, we're going to Jackson, and that's a matter of fact. Yeah, we're going to Jackson, ain't never coming back. Yeah, we're going to Jackson. Ain't never coming back.
And that was our local singer-songwriter, Leanne Patrick, and Glenn Kennedy with a very famous song in Jackson. Peter, we've had a question, and I hope someone's not trying to test out how they're going to go. But anyway, we've had a phone call from a guy and he wants to talk about affairs. Now, we know that you've done a bit with cheating guys and all that sort of stuff, and he's been told, and he wants us to confirm, or for you to confirm or deny, he's been told that affairs very often come to heads around Christmas Day, that the guy who's been had an affair on the side on Christmas Day, he's home playing dad and, you know, father and all this, and the lady often is by herself on Christmas Day. And he's been told that affairs late December, early January often blow up. Now, I'm hoping this guy's not trying to find out what his chances are, but is that true, Peter, do you know, in what you've done?
Well, I think the first thing to mention is, as we're probably all aware, unfortunately, domestic violence can have a bit of a peak around the Christmas New Year period.
Yep.
To answer your question, look, I am aware of a couple of cases where that scenario does play out, that the lady has nowhere to go, if you like, on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve for that matter. So there's a truism there in part. It could also be the other way around, of course, that the male half of the affair relationship may be at a loose end over that period as well, perhaps separated from the wife and doesn't have access to the kids, if there are kids during that period. I think maybe what's a more interesting aside there is that, of course, that's also the time that people tend to be on holidays. Yep. Which means the opportunity to undertake the nefarious activity might be limited due to the fact that they're on holidays, either away, of course, or having to be more accountable in respect to being around home. So that could also be a reason why affairs might become more obvious, or there's more pressure during that, you know, Christmas, January period.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Oh, well, never having had one and never particularly wanting to have one, I wasn't sure about that, but he'd heard that it can. And I guess that the other thing is too that you've just touched on it with domestic violence. I was at a forum the other night where they were talking about domestic violence. And look, I know it's really easy for people to sit here in a studio and say, look, you don't have to put up with it. To the reality is that you've got somebody hanging over you that threaten you, belt you up or something the likes of that. But really, there is, and don't believe this rubbish about, oh, he only did it because he loves me. Well, that's got to be the greatest lie I've ever heard. Wouldn't you, Peter, agree with that?
Oh, yeah, I think we're slowly moving in better directions in respect to the acceptance and reacting and doing something about that sort of behaviour. But there's also a massive element of the financial control as well, and that's another way of exerting influence in a relationship, is to, you know, holding the purse strings and having a real tight rein on the financial decisions and things like that. So that's probably as much an element as anything else. And obviously, from what I see, there's many situations where a relationship remains together basically for the sake of bringing up the children to a certain age. And then it's at that point, I guess, when the children are old enough or they've moved out of home, that things might come to a head in respect to what's been going on in the meantime.
Peter, I guess that's okay that people do stay together. Well, it's not here for us to judge anyway, I guess. But, I mean, it's a bit different if the lady is being knocked around though too, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I think everyone can agree in today's era that behaviour is just not acceptable at whatsoever.
Yep.
And then it's a question of, you know, perhaps the policing and the enforcement of that and things like intervention orders. Maybe that's a little bit behind what perhaps our expectations are, and political correctness in that regard is now.
I was actually talking to a policeman the other night. I was at a seminar on domestic violence. And he was saying, and I'm only repeating this because if there's any lady listening, the police have a far different reaction now. Like 30 years ago, it was down the bottom. But I'm told that if any lady rings in, or I guess a guy too, with domestic violence, they'll get the first van wherever they are and they'll go. They'll drop everything else for a domestic violence call over basically anything else.
Yeah, and I think we mentioned this a few months ago. There was an article put out by Victoria Police saying that they, and I can't remember what the number was, but they had an intake of officers go through a course in respect to specifically dealing with domestic violence, but also better assessing the likelihood of, more often than not, the male perpetrating a continuance of the domestic violence and breaching orders and things like that. So even then, that's showing Victoria Police are taking it more seriously and having, you know, officers specifically trained to try and identify the risk to prevent, you know, things like the Rosie Batty case and things like that coming up again. Yeah,
because I believe that this policeman was saying that all the police will eventually be trained in domestic violence. And, of course, one of the problems is that the poor old van that turns up is usually the least experienced policeman in the force too, aren't they? But they will still step in and do what they have to do because that's what they've been trained to do now.
Yeah, well, you're right about that. Can be the case that the less experienced officers are running around in the van. But, I mean, you know, take your hats off to the unfortunate situation that police officers find themselves in so often, where they're walking into a red-hot environment and they really don't know what the background or the history is, and, you know, they've probably unfortunately got a female that's, you know, bleeding or bruised or been flattened or something like that, and, you know, they have to make some very quick decisions, and unfortunately, you know, mental health's becoming more and more of an issue with this as well. So, yeah, it's a tough one. I don't envy the role of Victoria Police at times, that's for sure.
No, me either. And I've got to say that, again, though, that if you are experiencing domestic violence, don't believe this rubbish about he only does it because he loves me. If you can get out, the police will help you. They are all being trained now to do that. Peter, we'll take another quick break and we'll be back with more.
Thank you.
Song especially for Peter. I know he's a Pink Floyd fan, and that was Pink Floyd and Bike. And Peter is extremely generous with his time. He's with us once a month for an hour and answering your questions and my questions, and we do thank you. And Peter's business, of course, is Absolute Facts. So thank you, Peter. Peter, just a quick question, nothing to do with being a PI. What's Chris, I ask all my guests during December, what's Christmas Day at P.I. Pete's house? Do you have any special traditions, or do you all get together, or what's your day at Woodlock at Peter's place?
Yeah, sure. Just before you go on that, for the Pink Floyd Tragics, that song was written by Syd Barrett, and it was actually pre-David Gilmour days, which for a Pink Floyd aficionado, well, that will mean something. But look, Christmas...
I need you to do the research on all our songs. That was terrific.
Yeah, look, Christmas Day over for the last few years has been a lot more relaxing. We've sort of minimised it down to just immediate family.
Yep.
And that works really, really well after so many years of, you know, arguing about whose place it's going to be and who's invited and catching up with 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 or whatever it was people. For the last, I think about the last half dozen years, it's just been my wife and myself and my my two children, my two daughters and their partners. Oh, and we've kept it very, very simple, and it's actually so much more enjoyable, I have to be honest, just to chillax, and there's no not too much preparation of food and a lot of food cooked on the day, and just very, very relaxing. So
who gets to do all the work, though? Your wife, mum, well, or the kids?
She who must be obeyed still does most of the work, and she'll tell me all about that. But and on that basis, she's now got a lot less to do because there's only really six or seven or eight people to cater for, as opposed to the old days when it was, you know, setting up tables and cooking and cooking and cooking for the days prior. So it's certainly a lot more chillaxing atmosphere now.
And then there's all the cleaning up afterwards as well, when you've got big crowds too.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm not sure, Alan. Did you ever clean up?
I try a bit, but... Peter, you were going to tell us about a few of the frequent asked questions of PIs.
Yeah, so just to give a little bit more background, Alan, as to some of the things, one of the things that comes up, you know, when people contact you, it's about privacy, and obviously the concern that them speaking to us would then be, you know, passed on anywhere else or anything like that. And the short answer is no. Confidentiality is obviously a keystone of our industry. And the only real requirement, I think I spoke about this quite a while ago, was that Victoria Police do have the right to ask you if they've come across you out in the field, to ask you who you're working for and things like that. You wouldn't necessarily tell them immediately, but they do actually have the right to inspect your job book if you actually kept a job book. So there's sort of little technicalities like that. But look, I can only go back to my experience, and in 30 years I've never had a leak in respect to confidentiality or anything like that. I have occasions come across being contacted by both sides of the coin, which is always an interesting conversation when you're trying to subtly, well, you can't actually tell the other side of the coin that you've already heard. So that's an interesting one to deal with.
Are you allowed to work for both sides, Peter? Or
oh, absolutely not.
Right. Because no, ethically it would be terrible, wouldn't it?
No, it'd be a massive conflict of interest. So, no, you have to try and get out of it without making it obvious as to why you're getting out of it. So you'd be unavailable or just whatever. You'd have to. But it has happened, I think. Look, to be fair, probably only three or four times over the journey.
Yep.
One of the other, well, obviously, like for anyone in business, one of the main things that come up, of course, is the cost.
Yep.
And I think to give your audience a bit of a guideline, to use my services in general, if you work on roughly $100 an hour, that gives you a bit of an idea. So you can't sort of be held to that, but that gives you a ballpark figure, depending on what the work is and what's involved.
And costs too, the cost to you as well, isn't it?
Yeah, there's other costs on top. So there's some kilometres costs, some travelling costs, some petrol. Yep. There's time to get to a location, then there's time on the job. So, look, you have a bit of a negotiation. There is a package put up on my site that gives people a basic... some basic guidance and a basic price to get some initial work done.
Yep.
Another one that comes up, Alan, is about, you know, the payment, and you don't want necessarily on your credit card statement, you know, something about, you know, investigatingwife.com.au kind of thing. Mm. So there are some discrete payment methods. Obviously, cash is the most discreet, and for those people who are going to ask the question, no, there's no discount for paying in cash, because basically it's got to go through my books anyway because of insurance and legalities and things like that. So,
Peter, just before you go on one more step, you mentioned before about confidentiality, and but the courts can can, if a case went to court, that they can ask you, can't they? I'll tell you the context I mean, because we have a legal team come in from time to time, and I know they've said they never ever ask a client whether they're guilty. They don't want to know, because the courts, while they've got confidentiality between them and the clients, the courts can overrule that and say, well, you know, they can ask the question. Whereas, so they tell me that lawyers never ever ask if anyone's guilty. So I guess the same would apply with a private investigator, wouldn't they? That the courts could, in fact, if it came to a court case, ask questions. But so you don't want to know anything that you don't need to know, I guess, is what I'm saying. Am I right?
Yeah, true. And of course, you've got to also bear in mind that the other side, in inverted commas, could also subpoena all your records as well. So,
oh, can they?
Oh, absolutely. They can subpoena. You know, what they get in return is obviously up to the discretion of you know, instructing solicitors and things like that. But yeah, I mean, you've got to. I keep exceptionally good records, and I've got records going back for 30 years. But I'm going to be honest with you again, Alan. I've never actually had to provide anything. I beg your pardon. Only one occasion have I ever actually had to provide a court with you know, basically the subpoenaed evidence as to what I'd done, you know, emails, reports and things like that, yeah.
So is there a requirement by law that you do keep very detailed information?
No, I think my understanding is I'm only subject to the taxation type scenario, which is, I think, 7 years or whatever it is that you have to keep your records. I just happen to keep them because I've got them. And very, very rarely I have actually things that you know, that you've done, oh, you know, 8, 10, 12 years ago, for whatever reason, might come up for legal matters or court hearings or whatever, and you get a desperate email or phone call from the persons that's instructed you, you know, perhaps the solicitor or whatever, saying, have you still got that report, have you still got that evidence, have you still got that video? And generally I can say yes, but it might take me some time to recover it. Yeah.
Peter, it's, pardon me, I think I remember you telling me too, or telling the audience, that particularly with a guy having an affair, that very often if the wife forgives him now, 3 years later, am I right, that she's offered back again?
Yes, look, I do get a lot of repeat business, unfortunately, for the female. But, yeah, I've had, I think, 4 times I've been out for a hand, less than a handful of clients over the journey. So yeah. 4 occasions, yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to butt in. Have you got
no, other okay.
Questions?
Yep. So sort of from my perspective, or from trying to sort of educate my clients in respect to things that they shouldn't do, first one is they shouldn't assume that they already know the target's movements, because a lot of times what they think someone's week looks like doesn't necessarily be the case. And therefore new and different activities become apparent as a result of having a bit of a look around. Stalling is another thing, so people can procrastinate a bit. Obviously, people will also shop around, and you fully expect that they're always trying to save a buck here and there. But my usual response to that is the cheaper service may not necessarily be the best.
You get what you pay for, don't you?
Yeah, I think you do in this industry, yeah, to be fair. And the other one is, and again, sort of along the stall aspect, is I encourage anyone that rings me to stick the toe in the water and make an initial step and be brave from that respect. And then once you start the inquiry or the court, you know, the course of conduct or whatever, it'll take its own momentum. And obviously they can stop at any point. That's their prerogative. Yep. But generally, once you start getting information and results for them, they'll continue on until they're satisfied that they've got what they're after.
Peter, I've got another question for you, but I just need to take a break. I've got a sponsorship announcement popped up. And, of course, being Christmas, I didn't load the shows with Christmas songs, but, hey, who can do better than Silent Night? So we'll be back in a couple of minutes, Peter.
No problem.
Thanks. Saying that I'm like a big kid around Christmas time. I just love carols. I reckon that's one of the nicest carols I've ever heard, Silent Night. But anyway, and I should just mention, I mentioned the last hour, I know Christmas time is sometimes sad for people, that some people have lost loved ones, others it's the first Christmas by themselves. I talked to someone just the other night, her husband's passed away during the year and she's going to find it hard. And I know a lot of people have had families that have shattered over the years and they find it very, very lonely. If you are going to find it lonely, we'll be here, but not that we can do a lot for you. But look, there are a lot of community lunches. Get on your local council and have a look. All the local charities, Salvos and Vinnie's, a lot of those run a Christmas dinner at lunchtime because we don't want anybody to be sad on Christmas Day. Peter, something you just said before, that people shouldn't be too, pardon me, too locked in, that, you know, that when they come to you, they've got to be adaptable. Have you, on occasions, and maybe you'd like to just expand a little bit, have you ever had where, because I know you mainly work for ladies, so we'll talk ladies, or it could be men, where they've come along and said, husband's having an affair, I want you to get all the evidence, we want to go to court. And so you say, yeah, all right, so you go away and you find out that she is just completely wrong? Or is it normally by the time they get you, they're right?
Yeah, I think I've touched on this before, Alan. My female clients have 100% success records, so I know when they're ringing me that the chances are very, very likely that I'm going to get the evidence thereafter. I agree from what you're saying is probably by the time they've rung me, they've got a fair, well, they know for sure something's going on. They probably have a bit of an idea who the other party is, work colleague, sister, whatever, that kind of thing. And they may have even had a bit of a try at it themselves and may it probably hasn't proven to be too successful. So my job's to get the knowledge. It's not often that they'll ever ring to say they want the evidence to go to court, because these days, of course, with divorces and all that sort of stuff, that it doesn't really matter who's done what to who and et cetera, and who's playing up. It's just a fact. Then from my female client's perspective, they just want the confirmation so they can make
the absolute facts.
They want the absolute facts so they can make a decision as to what they're going to do. Is it enough for them to you know, go through, unfortunately, all the rigmarole of moving out of the family home usually and then proceeding with divorce, trying to get some financial independence, all those sort of difficult decisions and courses of action that they might want to take. And it leads back to what we talked about before about the amount of repeat business I get, which from my perspective shows that the other side, usually the male, is very good at ingratiating themselves back into the relationship and getting and receiving another chance. So the old flowers and chocolates routine, and again, it could be a factor of staying together for the sake of the younger children or children in general. So there's all those sort of things that happen.
Peter, I heard about another case, and I know this is true, but I'm wondering if you ever come across a case where a guy actually had two families. He actually had his family conned, one family conned that he was a commercial traveller or something, and he was gone from Monday to Friday in his job. And so he lived with one, and he actually had two children, I think, with both partners. One he was married to, one he was living with, and the other one, I don't know how he was able to get away with only living there. Well, that was the weekend, and I don't know how he got away with the other. But have you ever come across a case like that?
Well, I certainly have on the TV, and yes, I do believe it has happened in real life as well. I'm not sure of the percentage or ratios, but I imagine it'd be fairly unusual. But
so you yourself haven't had a case like that?
I've personally never had a case like that. I have heard about cases like that in Melbourne, in Victoria, and obviously, again, referring to movies and TV shows, that situation does get depicted occasionally, yeah.
Well, I believe when I was told, he had one family in Oakley, Springvale way somewhere, and he had another one just out the other side of the city, and he only got caught because the friend, I just can't remember the whole case, but the friend of the first family was visiting somebody over at this other area, and they saw this person and they spoke to someone and said, oh, yeah, he lives there. And turns out they had two families. It'd be very costly.
I think it'd also be quite exhausting, Alan.
Sorry, Peter, I didn't mean to sidetrack. Have you got the other little quirky facts?
No, not really. Just look, just encourage people if they've got an issue and they want to make contact, then I'm happy to talk to people for, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes or so to sort of see what their problem is and see whether I might be able to assist them. So just generally offer that potential for anyone who's stuck in a situation and they're not sure what to do about it. Yeah.
Peter, you said before that you mainly, I think you've, he said you only work for female clients in relationships. What's the overriding reason for that? Are the blokes just born liars or what?
No, I think what I did say was I prefer to work for the female client, firstly because I know I'm going to get a result given my track, the history of what's happened in the past. And secondly, there's always that element when you're, if you're working for the male, you're then watching a female and you may not get the full story. There could be, you know, the element of can't let go of a relationship, and there could be orders in place already that they may not tell you about and things like that. So when I'm working for the male, I always go in with a little bit more reticence in some ways, but I'm also a lot more careful about what questions I ask and what I'm actually doing, because it's far easier, I guess, and I'm being a bit sexist here, it's far easier to be accused of harassing a female than it is to harassing a male. Wow.
And also, I think you said once before that, I know, what was it you said? I don't know. Maybe the guys are just a bit, I don't know. I forget what I was going to say, to be very honest with you. It was something that you said a while ago. But anyway, look, Peter, it's been a fascinating year. We've loved having you along every month. We've learned a lot, as I say, and I keep saying this, a lot of, and I know you think it's only me, but I know I talked to people away from the station who say that their idea of a PI was mine, that is, you know, fast car, women hanging around them and shooting people up and doing all that. It's fascinating to talk to a guy who actually does the job and is honest enough to tell us all about it. So, look, to you and your family, Peter, I wish you all the best over Christmas. Are you going away at all, Peter?
No, I generally stay open. It's probably a good time of year just to go into semi-cruise mode and watch a bit of cricket on the TV and things like that. So, no, not at this stage.
All right, Peter. Well, I've got to get out of the studio. Pardon me, to let Greg come in, but thank you for your time. We look forward to talking to you on the first first Wednesday of February.
Yeah, look, and thank you very much, Alan, for the opportunity, and I wish you and your listeners a prosperous and also a safe Christmas and New Year.
Thank you, Peter, and we'll talk to you in the New Year.
Okay. Thanks, bye, mate, for now. Bye.